American Weekend.
Carl, do you remember, several weeks ago, I read a quote to you and asked you if you could identify
yes.
who the individual was?
Correct.
And you were very close, but the answer was Emerson.
Emerson.
Ralph Waldo Emerson. Mm-hmm. And it was taken from an essay that he wrote called The Uses of Great Men. And, of course, when he wrote that, the male counterpart was the thing you always referred to. But even today, when you say the uses of great men, you really mean humankind or mankind,
correct.
Men
correct.
And women.
Men and women.
And so, you know, in this is the 21st century, but in the last century, there were a lot of very great men and women.
Without question. And my thoughts, when I put this together, I thought of Eleanor Roosevelt. My mom had the pleasure of meeting her. She visited a public school in Greenwich Village. And my mother happened to be the president of the PTA at the time. And they had lunch together, and they all chit-chatted with some of the teachers. But her concern always, and she remarked a great deal about it, was always about the children and what can we do to make their education better. How do we move this along? And, you know, her other concern was polio, because the polio vaccine would come out the following year. Salk would have that out, and I was one of the test babies for that one too.
That was the 56 or 57?
56, yes, yeah. 56, I believe. This was 54, 55 when she visited it was PS3 in Greenwich Village, right. In New York. And she had such a feel for the community. This is a woman who was the wife of one of the most extraordinary presidents we've ever had, whether you agreed with him or not. He took us through the greatest conflagration, which is, of course, World War II, and how we managed to pull that off. I'm still amazed to this day. It amazes me as what we did as a country in just 4 years. It's amazing. And before that, the Great Depression. She was with him every step of the way. Was as knowledgeable, as smart, and did all the things that he could not do. Because remember, he could not walk. He had no visible mobility.
Yeah, but the Great Depression was October of 29, and then lasted for until
the war.
Until the war.
We were in.
But he was not president at that time.
No, but he became president in 36.
Right.
But they were involved in the campaign very early on in 34. When she went out on the trail with him, but she was the vocal point, she was the firing point, and got it all done. She was his campaign manager. God bless her. She was just about everything, and whether she agreed with her husband or not, and she also knew, of course, of his affairs at the time. He was quite the ladies' man. Not condoning that, but he was. That's the fact, and that's history. But she kept going, and the things that she did. We talked about Congress in a recent session on the show. She made it all work. She was the mouthpiece. She was the person behind the scenes making it work for the president of the United States. She met with them all, and she was both feared and loved. They hated having to, what they call, get into one of her coffee clutches, because she has very pointed questions. What have you done? When Detroit couldn't move fast enough on the production of certain things that had to come out, it was Eleanor Roosevelt who went to Detroit and got the unions going and got the presidents and the unions talking. She went to the West Coast to calm down the West Coast fears when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor and they thought they were going to be invaded next. It was Eleanor Roosevelt who was on the West Coast doing that quietly. Not a lot of noise. The president couldn't do it. He couldn't travel that much. She did it. And she did it with the kind of sense that she understood history. She understood her place. She understood what she had to do to make it work. And she did. And she did it remarkably well. Well after her husband passed on, into the 50s and 60s, Eleanor Roosevelt was a force in the Democratic Party.
Oh, indeed. I mean, she became United Nations ambassador.
Oh, she was a force. She was a force.
And I think so, very much so. But it took her a long time to find her voice.
Her voice. And when she did, though, she could not be calmed and would not be stilled. And that is one of the reasons why I've put her into the pantheon of great men and women of the 20th century. Whether you agree with her or not, she was in the game. She was a fighter, and she let you know how she felt. And by the way, I did meet her only once, and I was a child. She wasn't very diplomatic. She was pretty straightforward, very nice and very gentle.
Get out of here, kid.
Yeah. she was a woman who spoke her piece. You have to give these kinds of people, we can use so many more of them today. They get it done.
You know,
they figure out a way to get it done.
My part of the country where I live is up in old Roosevelt territory.
Yes.
Where his presidential library is along the Hudson.
Mm-hmm.
And his wife, Eleanor, whom you're talking about so eloquently, had a cottage of her own called Valkill.
Valkill.
Which was just magnificent. I had the opportunity a number of years ago to tour Valkill with a docent who would talk about, you know, her life there and mm-hmm. what she was doing. And then I sat down with Christopher Roosevelt.
Interesting.
One of the grandsons.
Yes.
And to talk about his grandmother.
That must be interesting.
And it was. I'm going to see if I can find that on an old tape, and maybe we can get it transposed to audio.
Let's see if we can.
Yeah.
I'd love to be able to hear that, because the remarkable nature of the woman, she stood unto herself. She was this unique person who never asked much of herself, frankly, not of Roosevelt, her husband, either, but she just got it done. When she was the go-to person in the White House to make sure if he couldn't do it, give it to Eleanor, and she did.
Well, have you been watching the new Ken Burns series on the Roosevelts?
I've caught some of it, but I will catch more of it because he's wonderful,
oh,
Ken Burns.
Well, I only saw the first one so far, but I'm going to buy the set.
I am too.
And watch it because it's just wonderful.
It's the kind of thing, and it's exactly what I like doing. It's the kind of thing when I got his Civil War, not to get off the topic,
right.
I actually bought the set, and that's the kind of thing you have to watch in peace and quiet.
Yeah.
You have to be away from everyone just to absorb the genius of it all. Ken Burns, in my opinion, is one of the very best at what he does. But I will get the Roosevelt, so I understand it's absolutely wonderful.
I wonder if Mr. Burns would come on as a guest to talk to us.
Let's try that. I know someone who knows him well. I'm going to see if I can't do that.
That would be really interesting. And I think he could be, his counsel could be of great value to our listeners.
I agree. Because he has a wonderful eye.
Mm-hmm.
A wonderful eye for history, but how to present it. That's the thing I enjoy so much about his ability to be able to take, of course, the Civil War, which I consider to be one of the finest pieces of feature documentary work ever done on television, ever. For as long as we've had television, that's one of the very best.
Well, you mentioned something that I think is very valuable, and that is how you present it. I mean, a great teacher will make a presentation or present the information he or she is teaching. And it, depending on the presentation, is directly proportionate to how much the student learns.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely true.
I remember in college, I had one of the dullest history professors I'd ever heard my entire life. And you're trying to understand the Peloponnesian War with the dullness of a professor reading his lecture.
Unbelievable. You know, there's nothing, the only thing that's just one step worse than a dull professor is a mumbling professor.
Well,
I've had those. I couldn't get any closer, and I still didn't understand them. you know, it's amazing when you find your, we move from topic to topic here, but it all relates. It all comes together. Because the one thing, speaking of communication, that Eleanor Roosevelt was a wonderful communicator. The woman knew how to get her point across, and in a very succinct way. It's the one thing I always knew about her. I read her book. It's a wonderful book. She gets her point across in the least amount of words.
Where does your passion come from for Eleanor Roosevelt? I mean, there are many in the 20th century that you started to talk about, and you only got to her.
Because my family actually worked with her in some aspects of programs she started. My Aunt Rose worked in the public health uh-huh. program. She started in the Lower East Side when the Hispanic community started growing, and there was no one, they had no health care. My Aunt Rose was a public health nurse. That uh-huh. program was started by Eleanor Roosevelt. Okay? And so I have, there's a direction and a feeling for the woman did it. And she did it. It was her own money, by the way, to help get it started.
That's true. That's true. She had some money by herself.
By herself, and she did. And that was. I was brought up with that. And it stayed with me. And then I did my history on her. I did my research. And the more I read, the more I found to be a remarkable woman across the board. But based on today's world, she was a doer. She was a doer. We don't have that anymore. People who do things. Here's the problem. Let's go fix it. And we do.
I think we do have the people out there. It just comes to mind very quickly, perhaps Jimmy Carter and his Habitat for Humanity.
Granted.
I think that's a doer thing.
We have to have more of that. The world needs it. We do.
Yeah, rather than raising money in foundations, we need legitimate action to correct the ill that is perceived immediately.
You see it and correct it, and that's the key. And that's what we try to do here on Smith Sabatino.
We do.
With Roland Smith and Carl Sabatino. America's Weekend. We're back.
Weekend. Think Green. Harris with you. The results of the first ever national random sample survey of bankruptcy filers conducted by researchers at Cambridge Hospital and Harvard Medical School, Harvard Law School, and Ohio University show 60% of all bankruptcies in the United States are driven by medical bills. Since 2007, the share of bankruptcies from medical bills has continued to increase. Get this, bankruptcies were actually designated as medical based on the stated reasons a person had for filing. And those with health insurance were underinsured, leaving them responsible for thousands in medical bills they simply couldn't pay. Nationally, about a fourth of all companies cancel insurance right away when an employee has a major illness, and the other 25% cancel insurance within a year, according to Natural News. And losing a job due to recession also can mean losing health insurance coverage.
Think Green with Harrison at GoHarrison.com.
Order in the court.
This is attorney Jay Coleman with the final verdict. Lisa was driving down a city street at the appropriate speed limit when her car hit a pothole. She heard a scraping sound, and when she got home, liquid was leaking from her car. As it turned out, Lisa ended up paying $300 for car repairs. So in this case, does Lisa have to foot the bill, or do you think she can get reimbursed from the city? The final verdict after this.
Don't try to fight the IRS on your own. Use Coast One Financial Group and let them help you get a fresh start. Dial 877-219-8780. That's 877-219-8780.
So is the city liable for pothole damage? Yes. If the pothole was dangerous, the city has a duty to be aware of it and to keep the city streets reasonably safe. And that's the final verdict.